You are listening to the Andy Zanka Youth Empowerment Program. This is our monthly youth news show. My name is Stacy Stein. In July, I attended a meeting of Garfield County Prep teenage interns and their facilitator, Diana Andrews. They were joined by Corey Barrett, a mental health professional and consultant from Denver. Garfield County Prep is a collaboration of schools, community-based organizations and agencies, government departments, concerned citizens, and teens who provide education and resources to parents and teens on healthy sexual development, healthy relationships, and sexual health issues. Corey talked to the group about inclusivity and finding trusted adults for support.
Child and adolescent tend to be my favorite populations to deal with. I like the complexity of young people. I think that's exciting and grand. So I like being able to partner with young people to promote healthy development. So started doing some community work. I directed a community service agency for a few years. In Denver in particular, I directed the youth program for the LGBT community center there for a number of years. Got to do some incredible work while I was there, got to meet some amazing young people while I was there. And although I was the director, it was, for the young people who came there, it was their space. It was a place for them. And so I felt like, even though I, you know, control the purse strings and all of those aspects, I was a guest in their home was the philosophy that I preferred to utilize. And so we did a lot of work around sexual health, around good mental health, around advocacy, how they could advocate for themselves, how they could advocate for their peers. You know, looked at things through a political lens as well, which I think is important for young people to engage in. Even if you're not at an age where you may be able to cast a vote, you certainly have an opinion. You certainly have a future that you should want to have some investment in. And so I think the more that we could do from a community organizing standpoint to prepare young people to engage in the community process or the political process and so forth, the better off they were. And we did a lot of work around sexual health in particular. My work now, I'm still doing some clinical work, but I have a consulting practice now, and that takes me across the state, like being here today. I also do some national work as well. I, again, wanted to make sure that we had a conversation, so I appreciated the questions, and I'm wondering if that's where we should start, unless you all would like to start somewhere else.
So I just had a question. How could an underage girl find a trusted adult to get advice about birth control?
That's tough, I will say, in particular. And I think there are a lot of components to that question in particular. If a young woman is looking at birth control, it may be just specifically from a preventative measure. It may be as a result of some other incident or concern that may have come up. There's a lot that can go into that. I think then there's the other component of are the parents or legal guardians for this young person aware? Are they going to be looking at the need for consent from that adult or guardian? That could be a factor. When looking at who to trust, it's been my experience that young people tend to look towards each other first. So I think that peer-to-peer piece can be really, really helpful. So this young person may find other young women who may be utilizing forms of birth control and may want to consult with them first and connect with them first to sort of see what was their process for doing that. So I think that may be sort of that first place. And that we don't want to underestimate that peer-to-peer trust, because you can relate to each other immediately versus, oh, well, let me tell you what it was like when I was a teenager 30 years ago, you know, or something of that nature. There's a lot that I think can go into that piece as well. So being able to find a young person or a peer that they can connect with, I think, is great. Looking at agencies or organizations that either cater to that young person's community that they may identify on a racial level or on a gender or sexual orientation level, I think is also another great way or starting point as well. I can think back to some of the agencies that I've been to, particularly with my former agency, you know, young women who, whether they identified as lesbian or bi or whatever their identity was, because they knew that we had a youth program, because they knew that we had a sexual health program, would come to us. And then they would find out that then we were connected to other health organizations, Planned Parenthood, or in Denver, it was Denver Health and public health places, where we could provide them some guidance to receive information about birth control and that sort of thing, as well as even be another link of support to them. So it may be, you know, it may have been one of my staff and the young person and their peer going together just to get that information. So I think there are sort of a variety of ways, but it all starts definitely with finding out from that young person what makes you feel comfortable. What are you willing to do? Where are you willing to go? And that sort of thing, so that they're comfortable throughout that process. But knowing that it's not just a situation where I have to go to my family doctor that I've been going to since I was three, who you probably don't want to have that conversation with because it may get back to your parents or that sort of thing, knowing that there are other options beyond that. Although I say if you have that type of relationship with your general practitioner already, that's awesome. Definitely utilize that, definitely keep that. But if not, know that there can be some other options as well.
If you're taking birth control or considering taking birth control, you should definitely consult with like an adult because there are some health risks. There's been cases where they've caused cancer or they can stop your period and when it comes back, it's really messed up. So it's good to like talk to your doctor, make sure you're getting the right brand and you have an adult with you and you have someone you can trust, go to the doctor with you because it helps a lot.
And I will add to that, I like to do a lot of research on my own so that I'm an informed consumer when I do go to the medical professional. And in Colorado, in Denver specifically, there is bc4u.org. That's the letter B, the letter C, the number 4, the letter U.org, and that stands for Birth Control for You. So you can actually go online, research all the different forms of birth control, find things that, ooh, no, that's definitely not me, or, oh, I might be interested in that, and then know what questions to ask your peer, trusted adult, hopefully a parent, or your medical professional to narrow it down even further.
What do you plan to do in order to involve transgender and non-binary students in your sexual education?
I have had the pleasure of working with some amazing, amazing trans and gender non-conforming youth over the years. And particularly when I was doing or overseeing a sexual health program full time, there were a lot of young people who were involved in that. And the great thing was is that in everything that we did, particularly when it came to sexual health, it was important for us to recognize that everybody could come to the table and see themselves identified in some way or shape or form, which I would say is probably my biggest criticism with most sexual health curricula that exist is that they are very biased. They're very stereotypical, biologically based male-female biased. They're very heteronormative bias, so they reflect relationships specifically from between a male-bodied and female-bodied individual. And it doesn't take into account often sort of other components that go into that, such as, you know, maybe I'm not engaging in sexual activity with someone that's of the opposite gender of me, biologically or identity-wise. Maybe I'm engaging in activity with a number of people. I may have questions about that. You know, all of those things come into play. So when we would sort of revise, make recommendations, or in the development of our programming, as I said, trans young people and gender nonconforming young people were always a part of that.
As a follow-up to that, Garfield County Prep trains teachers in the classrooms to deliver our evidence-based curriculums. Is there a nugget of advice you could give teachers who may be reluctant to make their classroom more inclusive simply because they don't have a knowledge or understanding? Is there a hint or a tip you could give teachers that could easily make their classroom more inclusive to transgender and non-binary?
I think we always have to start with ourselves and look at, where is my bias, very pro, very against, whatever the case may be, when it comes to other folks who don't identify as me? So if we're specifically looking at trans or gender non-conforming young people, in this case, I need to look at where I stand from the standpoint of acceptance, awareness, and that sort of thing. Get a handle on that first. And then I think it goes beyond that, regardless of sort of what that outcome is that if I'm dealing with young people as a teacher, as an educator, then I have a responsibility to make sure that I'm educating them well and properly. And so if that's part of that devotion, then I should want to make sure that all of the young people that I'm educating are able to show up in that education, educational situation, whether it be through the programming and the curriculum that we're utilizing, whether it be the classroom practices that we have, whatever the case may be. So when I've spoken with teachers, I always say, is it okay for people to use gender defensive language in your classroom, and that sort of thing? So, do I refer to everybody as dude, which may be offensive to some folks because that's not how they identify. Do I have students who are in my classroom that are getting called out of their name, their preferred name, or called out from their preferred gender pronoun as well, which is aggressive as well. So are we addressing those issues? That would be very, very important. Do we set a tone like we did here where we get the opportunity to ask people, so what is your pronoun preference? That way I don't make an assumption based on how you present according to me and the way that I organize things. I can say, oh, well, this is how I think you identify, so here's what I'm gonna call you. From a respect standpoint, I should want to give you the opportunity to share with me how you identify and then make sure that I'm complying with that accordingly. So I think setting the tone from that standpoint is really, really important. Be aware, take notice of nonverbal communication, which could certainly be body language, facial expressions, things of that nature. If you hear someone address someone else and you notice that that probably didn't strike them very well, taking the time to find out what was that about, because again, it could be a situation that I may be aware of or I may not be aware of, but should be aware of, that, this young person is being disrespectful to this young person and not respecting their pronouns or their name preference. So I think it starts there and with that level of advocacy. And then when I'm, again, if it's sexual health curricula or something else, if we're gonna get into the identities of an individual, then we need to make sure that we're providing for everyone to show up in that conversation.
So my question is, which gender seems to be more comfortable talking about sexual intercourse?
I don't know that I feel like any specific gender is more comfortable, because there is pressure, particularly around conforming, on all sides. I still think, as ridiculous as it is even now, male-identified folks, particularly male-bodied individuals, are constantly feeling this pressure to promote that they're sexually active, to promote that, they can get it with this one and that one and so forth. The idea that, maybe they're waiting, maybe they're not sure, maybe they just, want to focus, on something else, other aspects of their being, isn't as appreciated, I think, as it should be when young people have so many decisions to make. I also think, considering, when we talk about pregnancy rates, when we talk about STI transmission rates and so forth, your peer group have a significantly high level or rate of incidence for that. And so, again, there are a lot of things that go into that, that, you know, that idea of sort of who feels comfortable, who doesn't, who can have those conversations, I think, comes in into play. You know, on the other side, if you will, for female-identified folks, particularly female-bodied individuals, it's more, that conversation is on a sort of greater level in that it's not just who you're engaging in activity with and what that activity is, but what could be the outcome of that activity, you know, can certainly be a factor. You know, some young people have shared with me, there's also that pressure around sort of your activity level as well. You know, are you seeing someone, you know, are you sexually active and that sort of thing? And then for folks who don't fall on that sort of, that binary level, you know, then we're talking about a whole nother sort of level of, you know, being comfortable with their bodies, being comfortable with other people. You know, sexual activity is more than just engaging in the act. And I think we need to get to a point of really recognizing how much goes into that. But as far as which gender is more comfortable or less comfortable, I think it's really across the board for everybody.
So you mentioned consent. For this generation, it's confusing what is yes and what is no. So what would you say to us, to teenagers of, to like, to help us understand what is yes and what is no?
In general, I'm a big fan of multiple modes of communication. So I say when it comes to consent, use all of them. So verbiage is always good as well, first and foremost. If you need to use gestures, pushing people away, walking away, whatever the case may be, that certainly could indicate no as well. Or if you're walking to or embracing someone, if that is part of your communication for yes, that's fine as well. And that it's not a one-stop sort of thing as well. As you are engaging in whatever activity, it may not always be what you expect. It may not be as exciting or as thrilling as you may expect. And so if it's not, you get to say, stop. You get to say, we're not continuing with this. Again, it's regardless of sort of what the reasoning is behind it. And if one person taps out, it has to be done. It's not a situation where it's got to be sort of a consensus of you both. One no is no, or one stop is stop, in my opinion. And I hear you. I don't know that in the adult world it's any less confusing. But again, I think it's really a matter of using, again, various modes of communication. And oftentimes I think it starts with having more conversation going into the situation versus sort of having it at the time or during.
Who can an adolescent talk to about same gender intercourse? And I wanted to add on to that and ask, where can adolescents find those people to talk to, not just who they are, but where they can find them?
Oftentimes, whether we're talking about, you know, having conversation around sexual intercourse or just to connect with somebody who identifies as they do, I've definitely known some organizations as well as young people themselves to create spaces for young people to connect, particularly since it may not be a situation where you can drive the 3 hours, you know, to Denver or whatever the case may be. Looking at, you know, some of these organizations that have online options is great. When young people are, you know, traveling and so forth, you know, I've had them say, hey, you know, or, you know, some of you may be on the dawn of looking at moving away for college and so forth. So looking at what are some options in some of those cities, that may be a factor to take into consideration and look at.
I know there are websites, organizations, the Trevor Project, GLSEN, that young people could get online and connect to help answer that question. I'm curious in regards to accessing healthcare. We oftentimes recommend a medical professional as that person to have those sorts of conversations with because they're not supposed to be judgmental and they are there to educate you on how to keep yourself safe and your partner safe. Is there anything young people can look for or ask when looking for a medical professional that will serve their needs and answer their questions without having to trial and error?
I want to say yes, but that seems really not too true. And that can be stemming from the standpoint of, one, is am I talking to someone that I can trust? You know, to not only have my best interest, but, and again, particularly dealing with young people in systems, mandatory reporting, and, you know, you're in this person's life as a professional, so do you need to tell this guardian or this professional about it? So all of those things, you know, come to mind. I think, one, if you're connecting with someone, if you're searching online or whatever the case may be, sort of going through a directory in your area, don't discredit sort of, you may have sort of your own level of anxiety anyway, but as you're going into and making a decision that maybe I'm going to move forward with connecting with this professional, don't deny sort of how you're feeling about that. If your anxiety level continues to increase, maybe that's not the person you want to go to. Evaluate for yourself what other levels of support you need. You just might need somebody else to be there to take up space with you. You know, it could be a friend, you know, or another peer or someone of that nature. So, you know, that could certainly be the case. If there are other adults that you trust, you know, you might want to consult them and see who do they know and see if they could provide some guidance from that standpoint or if they would also be willing to go with you. You definitely want to vet folks because we professionals, often being well-educated, often being well-experienced, come with our own bias and our own baggage as well. As much as I think it's important for me to own who I am and what I believe and what I think and so forth, and then if I'm supporting someone professionally, then I'm totally focusing on their best interests. Everyone doesn't necessarily do that. Or some folks may be struggling with doing that. And so you just have to be leery about, is this professional sharing information with me or offering me services that are in my best interest and that are gonna serve me well? If not, or even if they are and I'm just not that comfortable with this individual, then we need to look at what other options there are. I'm very curious, what drew you all in to participating in this project?
The community. I really wanted to get involved with other kids in the valley, get to know people, get involved with activities that can help myself and other people. And I thought that was a really cool like idea, so I wanted to become a part.
I came to prep in my freshman year summer, and I was referred and got an application for PrEP from one of my trusted adults at the high school that I used to go to. And that's how I came to be in PrEP, and now it's my fourth year at PrEP, so.
So it's kind of funny, when I joined PrEP, I just wanted something to do. I had no sort of knowledge or interest about anything we're talking about right now. And then in the 3 years that I've been here, I've actually gained interest and learned a lot about it. So it's a super helpful organization. Like, teens are just the most emotionally complicated people. It's like not that simple at all. So yeah, I think it's important that we put the condoms out there, because if a teen's gonna have sex, they're gonna do it, whether they have, you know, knowledge or the protection or not.
So I got interested in PrEP through my mom, because she does a lot of community work, but I wanted to write, I guess, for PrEP, because I think writing is just a way of sharing yourself, but, you know, through the internet, and that would, like, invoke a lot of youth, so yeah. I also thought that because I'm Christian, I'm not allowed to think the way or talk the way that we were just talking. And so I think that it's very important for churches as well to be involved in the community and with teenagers that go through a lot of the issues that we're talking about. And so I want to open those doors between churches and teenagers.
And I think that's amazing because there are a number of young people who, whether we're talking about sexual health or whether we're talking about sexual orientation, gender identity, that they're coming from a faith-based family stops them in their tracks. To recognize that you can be your authentic self, be who you are, live who you are, and still embrace your faith, I think is huge. And I think that's something that everybody should have the ability to do and should be able to find the comfort to do that. I would find it exciting for another young person who, coming from the same faith-based background that you're coming from, or just, it could be a totally different one, but recognizing that you can embrace both, I think could be very inspiring for them, which would be really, really awesome. Because unfortunately, I've again seen a number of young people where that's been a barrier for them, and where those young people feel like they had to choose between their family, their faith, or their authentic self. And I don't think anybody should have to make that choice or should be forced to make that type of choice. I think faith is important. I'm more concerned that you believe in something outside of yourself versus what that is that you believe.
That was Corey Barrett and Garfield County Prep teenage interns talking about how to support teens to make healthy choices as they navigate through adolescence. I'm Stacy Stein. Thanks for listening to the Andy Zanka Youth Empowerment Program. More information is at azyep.org.